presented by DogNation.com in partnership with the AJC. This is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
So a familiar face is back in Athens. Chip Towers at DogNation.com reports on Tuesday that Brian Van Gorder, former defensive coordinator with the Dogs, is back working as a consultant for Kirby Smart here in 2016, helping with the game plan, preparing for Georgia Tech. And obviously this is news in the sense that it's kind of a blast from the past. Georgia fans have fond memories of the 2002 SEC championship and the important role that Van Gorder played in the start of the Mark Richt era, really restoring a sense of physical toughness to the Georgia defense that hadn't been seen at that time since probably going back to Irk Russell's time as defensive coordinator. He was an incredibly popular figure when he was here, and I think the fact that he's back, even in just a consultant role, I think will be greeted by most Georgia fans as good news. And while Georgia fans are probably glad to hear that Van Gorder's kind of back on the scene, I think they also probably have a little bit of a question as well. Okay, so Van Gorder's a consultant, not an on-field coach. What exactly does that mean? Well, after practice on Tuesday, Kirby Smart shed some light on that.
A consultant can watch film, can break down tape, can watch tape, watch practice, observe, give opinions. He's a consultant.
So that's apparently what Brian Van Gorder is doing. And Chip Towers, who, as I said, broke the story at DogNation.com, also provided a little more context for exactly what Van Gorder's role has been at Georgia so far and what it will be going forward.
It's kind of a trend in the business right now. Steve Sarkisian, former head coach at Southern Cal in Washington, is working as an offensive analyst at Alabama. And so apparently Brian Van Gorder has been brought in by Kirby Smart to work as a defensive analyst for the Bulldogs. And my understanding from several people who have knowledge of the situation is that Brian Van Gorder was involved with Georgia's game plan for Auburn, which is not a small thing considering he was at Auburn very recently as defensive coordinator and probably has some insights into what the Tigers do on offense. And then he's been involved in the game planning ever since, going out to practice and helping those defensive coaches in meetings get ready for their opponent, including, Georgia Tech this week.
Now, it's worth pointing out that yesterday, Kirby Smart did dispute the idea that Van Gorder in any way chipped in with the game plan for Auburn. And yet, I'm going to go with Chip on this one because, A, as you heard, Chip got this from multiple sources, he said. And also, it's easy to understand why Kirby Smart, Brian Van Gorder, might not necessarily want it to get out that Van Gorder had had that role in helping prepare for a team that he recently coached for. I think it's understandable why they might want to try to keep that a secret if they possibly could. But nonetheless, Kirby Smart obviously brings in Brian Van Gorder because he's got a long track record in college football. And as Kirby Smart explained, he brings a lot to the table here for Georgia.
Helpful to us for this game specifically. He didn't come here until late last week and began work on Georgia Tech and was part of that game plan. He's very helpful though, very knowledgeable. I have a lot of respect for Brian, always have when he coached here, and Mel knew him when he was in the NFL, so Mel and him had a good relationship. And then he coached at Notre Dame and plays the academies and also played Georgia Tech.
So that's Kirby Smart's explanation for why Brian Van Gorder's here. And let me be clear about something for a moment. I think this is good for Georgia. Not for the reasons, though, that's necessarily going to be explained or reported the main conversation. Even what Kirby Smart kind of leads right there is, hey, he's helpful to help Georgia beat Georgia Tech on Saturday. Frankly, I don't think Georgia ought to need any extra help to beat Georgia Tech. And deep down, I don't think anybody else probably does either. That's not why I think Brian Van Gorder's valuable here. Not because his knowledge of the triple option is somehow going to give Mel Tucker and Kirby Smart something that they don't already possess. That's not what this is about for me. What this is about for me is twofold. The first part of this is recognizing someone that is an important part of Georgia's recent history. As I said before, he was the defensive coordinator on the 2002 team, and that was, simply put, one of the best teams in Georgia program history. And for a guy like that who had such a great contribution to an SEC championship a little more than a decade ago, if he has recently kind of fallen on professional hard times, and for some reason he has, and this is sort of a weird story in that when Van Gorder first left Georgia after the 2004 season, the narrative around the program was Georgia's different now that Van Gorder's no longer here. Georgia's defense is worse with Willie Martinez taking over, then handing the baton on to Todd Grantham. Georgia's not the same without Brian Van Gorder. But somewhere along the way, Brian Van Gorder wasn't the same without Georgia either. Was a disaster in his first year of head coach at Georgia Southern. Bounced around defensive coordinators a lot. He was D.C. at South Carolina, never coached a game there. Came to the Atlanta Falcons. That didn't really work out so well. Didn't work out great for him at Auburn. Obviously, he got fired during the middle of the season at Notre Dame. He has not had a lot of professional success since leaving Georgia, but he was a huge part of a great Georgia team. So in this sense, letting him be seen around football again, let other coaches hear Kirby Smart bragging on what Brian Van Gorder knows about the game. If that helps Brian Van Gorder get another job, I think that's the least George could do for a guy that's done a lot for Georgia over the years. But the other thing that's worth talking about here, and this is why I think this subject's so interesting, Brian Van Gorder's presence is an example of Kirby Smart taking advantage of something that he ought to take advantage of. Not because it helps you beat Georgia Tech. Georgia Tech's not a good team. Georgia ought to beat Georgia Tech no matter what. But this is what the Wall Street guys call a market inefficiency. This is an opportunity for Kirby Smart and Georgia to exploit something the rules allow to be exploited. And in college football, there's not a lot of that kind of stuff. In college football, you can only have so many on-field coaches. Every school gets the same number. So the advantage that you get in terms of your on-field coaches is minimal because everybody gets the same number. Players the same way. We know how important good players are. But we also know that every school only gets to sign 25 in 1 year. You can only have 85 total scholarship players at one time. There's only so much you can do when it comes to exploiting a market inefficiency with players. And what makes that even tougher is the fact that there are fewer good players than there are spots available. So everybody's fighting hard for the best players, and there's never going to be enough of those. There's only so much of an advantage you can give yourself from that standpoint. But there are a couple of areas in college football where there are no rules prohibitions. There is one against on-field coaches. There is one against total scholarship players. But there are a couple areas in which you can do exactly whatever you want to do. One of those is how much you pay your coaches. That's one of the reasons why if you've got a successful coordinator, I don't have a problem with you paying him whatever it takes to keep him, because that's what the rules allow you to do. Same thing for head coaches. Pretty soon a coach is going to make $10 million somewhere. If he's a really good one, I don't have a problem with that. I'd pay Nick Saban $20 million if I could, if I had to do that to keep him, or if I could do that to acquire him, because that's what the rules allow you to do. Spend as much money as you want to on head coaches and coordinators and with these consultants. As Chip Tower said a moment ago, this is what Alabama's doing. You can only have so many on-field coaches, but you can have as many consultants as you want. You can sort of pay them whatever you want to. So bring in a Steve Sarkisian. Make him at Alabama some sort of offensive consultant whose job description and day-to-day tasks are somewhat murky, but he's a guy that knows offense. He's a guy that's been a head coach, been an offensive coordinator, clearly a help to the program. And the same thing for Brian Van Gorder here. Whether you want to say that his last few stops as a defensive coordinator were a failure, they probably were. But this is still a guy that knows X's and O's. This is still a guy that knows defense. And if you can add him as a consultant without any kind of NCAA rules to stop you, you'd be foolish not to do those kinds of things. This is what makes Kirby Smart different than the way that Georgia football has been handled in the past. Georgia football in the past has sort of been good enough is good enough. And if you've got, you know, a lot of good players, who cares if you don't have the full 85? Then let's just go to war with what we have. If you've got pretty good coordinators, who cares if you could spend a little more and get some better ones? Let's just go to war with what we have. That's the way that Georgia football used to be. But what Kirby Smart's trying to do is to say, from now on, we're going to try to exploit every possible advantage we can get. From that standpoint, I think Kirby Smart ought to be commended for this, not just for the Georgia Tech game, but these kinds of consultants in roles like this moving forward. It makes Georgia the kind of program that marshals all its resources in the direction that it's supposed to go, making this program the best it can possibly be. My name's Brandon Adams. This is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. And so if you want to weigh in on the Van Gorder situation, if your take is different from mine or the same as mine, I'd love to hear your thoughts. You can reach out to me on Twitter, at Dog Nation Daily, my Twitter account, the same as the name of the show. You can also drop a comment in the comment section there at dognation.com. I'll also remind you that Dog Nation Daily is brought to you by Be Dry Waterproofing and Foundation Repair, your expert in basement and crawl space waterproofing solutions since 1958. Call 404-417-5531. That's 404-417-5531. and B-Dry will give you a dry home forever. All right, we've got a great show for you coming up. Later on, we'll talk to Kyle Tucker. And the reason why we'll talk to Kyle Tucker, twofold. First of all, nobody in our SEC country Dog Nation family probably knows more about college basketball than Kyle does. We'll talk to Kyle about Georgia's close call last night against Kansas. And I guess you'll call this a close call. I mean, Kansas ends up winning by double digits, but Georgia did make a push here late in the game. Yonte Maton goes over 30 points. We'll talk to Kyle about exactly how a Georgia fan is supposed to feel about that game last night. We'll get that from him coming up. We'll also get some thoughts on him about the Georgia-Georgia Tech game this Saturday, the other SEC rivalry games that'll be taking place. We'll do that with him coming up. In just a moment, I'll also have Dave Neal on, who'll be calling the Georgia-Georgia Tech game, clean old-fashioned hate, for the SEC Network on Saturday. We'll get a little preview of that from the guy who'll be in the booth calling the game for you on television. And I'll also remind you, it's time for our Gator Hater Countdown. Now, 338 days until the Dogs beat Florida in Jacksonville next October. And speaking of Florida here, I thought the Gators got some bad news last night. Did you watch the College Football Playoff Selection Committee release its rankings? Maybe you caught our path to the playoff on either DogNation.com, or I should say not DogNation.com. It was on SECCountry.com last night. Maybe you caught us breaking down those rankings. Myself and Randy McMichael did that on video, had a good time doing that. And one of the subjects we got into last night was the fact that Florida, the team that we talk about here on the Gator Hater Countdown, last night ranked just 15th by the College Football Playoff Selection Committee. I think that's bad news in a lot of ways. Now, Florida is a very, very outside, you know, chance of making the playoffs. That's not what that's about for me. But the Sugar Bowl spot is still open. We've talked about that a little bit this week. And Florida, by being ranked 15th, does not have a great inside track into that Sugar Bowl destination right now, because right now they're not the highest ranked SEC team besides Alabama. That goes to Auburn at 13. And by the way, Tennessee last night, according to the College Football Playoff Selection Committee, comes in 17th. So here you have a situation where Florida just goes on the road, pulls a huge upset, wins outright against LSU as a two-touchdown dog, and yet, you know, here they are not exactly getting the Sugar Bowl position they probably thought they would be getting from that. If all three of these teams lose on Saturday, I still think Auburn's in the best position. If Auburn, you know, loses close to Alabama on Saturday, who's to say they fall very much at all? If Florida loses to Florida State, if Tennessee beats Vanderbilt, which they're a big favorite over, all of a sudden at that point in time, Vols probably leap ahead of Florida here. So bad news for Florida in its pursuit of the Sugar Bowl on Saturday, that the College Football Playoff Selection Committee does not really show them a whole lot of love. And if you're a Gator hater, enjoying the Gator Hater Countdown, always good to see Florida get a little bit of bad news there. So with that, we'll get ready to shift our attention here over to Dave Neal. As I said, he's going to call the game for the SEC Network on Saturday. He'll talk to you about everything going to be happening on Saturday. He'll give his thoughts on the nature of the Georgia-Georgia Tech rivalry right now. He'll evaluate what he's seen so far from Jacob Eason in his freshman season at quarterback, and Dave here in our interview going to provide some very candid thoughts as well on what he thinks as the start of the Kirby Smart era. So we'll hear all that from Dave Neal coming up here on Dog Nation Daily. And before we do that, let me also remind you that even though it's Thanksgiving week, still going to have a Zaxby Zoundoff for you there at DogNation.com with Chip Towers and Seth Emerson. They'll break down clean old-fashioned hate as well. And when you look for that Zaxby Zoundoff, don't forget that nothing goes better with game day than the touchdowns and tailgating of the indescribably good food from Zaxby's. And that's true whether you're dining in at one of Zaxby's many locations or ordering something for a game day or tailgating event. You could always count on Zaxby's to be full of flavor and made to order just for you. From wings to chicken fingers and salads to freshly baked cookies and brownies, delicious doesn't even begin to describe Zaxby's menu. So when you're craving something amazing on game day, get your team together and head to Zaxby's, because Zaxby's is indescribably good. All right, Kyle Tucker later on. We'll talk Georgia basketball with him after the close call against Kansas last night. But it's Dave Neal right now. He is the play-by-play voice on the SEC Network. He and Matt Stinchcomb will have the call for Georgia and Georgia Tech on Saturday, and he joins us here on Dog Nation Daily right now. Want to welcome in Dave Neal here from the SEC Network. We'll have the call of clean old-fashioned hate on Saturday between Georgia and Georgia Tech. And Dave, before we get into the game, we were joking before the show started. For all those aspiring broadcasters out there who want to be play-by-play men one day, they should just sort of get a load of what a Thanksgiving week is like when you have the wraparound between football and basketball season. Maybe not quite as glamorous a life as it might seem to the outside look in, right?
I don't want to make it sound like I'm digging ditches, but yeah, it's a busy week. You know, Tuscaloosa on Saturday, and then you pack up your bags and you head to Tampa for basketball on Monday, and then you pack your bags again and make your way to Lexington for basketball on Wednesday, 1 o'clock in the afternoon, get home for a little Thanksgiving, and then make your way to Athens for a little Georgia Tech. So makes it a little busy, but you know what, like I said, it's not like you're digging ditches or anything, so it's not that bad, but yeah, you're not exactly spending a lot of time with your family.
No doubt about that. So on Saturday, when you do get to Athens, it'll be the renewal of this rivalry in state that so many people care about. I'm curious, how do you compare this Georgia Tech rivalry to the other rivalries around the South this time of year, the other rivals that Georgia has as a program? What's your view of the Tech-Georgia rivalry?
You know, it's interesting is that, you know, it is a rivalry, but it's not as intense as some of the other rivalries that I've been a part of in years past. And the reason being is I think Georgia just has had the better of Georgia Tech in recent times. And it's to make it one of those, I don't want to make it sound like it needs to be violent or vicious or anything, but to make it one of those truly intense rivalries, you need to have, kind of equal victories on both sides. And it just hasn't really been that way in the past few decades. It's still a great rivalry, don't get me wrong, and it's passionate, but it's not as intense. And, you know, one of the rivalries that gets overlooked that I've been a part of over the years is an Ole Miss-Mississippi State. You want to talk about two places that just flat out don't like each other.
And no doubt.
It's just mean and mean-spirited, and it's one of those things where it doesn't matter what it is. It's not that intense, and I'm kind of thankful in a way, living in Atlanta, that it's like it says, clean old-fashioned hate. These teams want to beat each other, but it's not in a bad way, so to speak. So, I enjoy it. I enjoy being around it. I grew up around it and been to many of these games, and I'm just glad to be able to call it.
Yeah, we're looking forward to hearing that call as well. And, you know, most of the people listening to us right now are obviously Georgia fans here on Dog Nation Daily. But from the Tech perspective, I said this earlier in the week, I'm a little surprised that they don't crow a little more. I mean, after all, they're coming back to Athens, a place they won in 2014, and the odds makers giving them a shot to win this game this week. And yet, it's really the Tech people you don't hear a lot from right now. You don't hear a lot of, Paul Johnson in that regard. That's always been his tone in this rivalry. I'm surprised that the Jackets don't push the envelope a little more.
Well, I think that they know history's not exactly on their side, in the big picture, although the history is on their side from the last time they came to Athens in one of the craziest games that, probably has been played in this series. What happened 2 years ago was nuts. You talk about some of the long fumble returns. You talk about how Georgia just completely botched the end of that game. The long field goal by Tech to send it into overtime, and how Georgia just completely missed it on the kick, the little pooch kick that set Georgia Tech up for that field goal. There were so many plays. There's 25 plays in there that were just crazy. And they just – think about it. They ran the ball. I forget what it was. I mean, it was over 300 yards, if I'm not mistaken, they ran the ball for against Georgia. I just think the numbers bear out that Georgia Tech doesn't want to crow too much. That was a great win. You go home last year and you don't have that kind of success. So I think you kind of maybe just kind of walk quietly and hope that you can kind of pull the same kind of performance. I think Georgia Tech, I watched the game against Virginia last week, and I know Georgia Tech got off to a slow start, but there were some plays in that game. Georgia Tech, they really could have opened that game up and won by a much larger number. I thought offensively they had some chances for some home runs and just missed the opportunities. I think that they're playing some pretty good ball down the flats right now, and Georgia's got to be ready. I mean, this is, as you mentioned, there are a lot of people there that think Georgia Tech has a shot in this game, and Georgia better be ready to go.
You know the story with Jacob Eason, Georgia's freshman quarterback. It's had some real interesting moments this season where it looked like he was about to put it all together. Then would occasionally kind of take a step back the way that true freshmen are kind of bound to do. And yet, I think you probably also know he is a ton of fun to watch. Really puts on a show when he throws the football. How much are you looking forward to broadcasting him on Saturday? Because obviously he's a great, great presence on TV at the moment.
Yeah, I've had a chance to watch him a couple times, Brandon, this year. And I've watched him have some really good moments, and I've seen some really bad moments, and that's what you're going to get with these true freshmen. But there's one thing that certainly stands out, and that is he's got, unbelievable ability. And at any moment, he can certainly make you go, wow. And I think here we are coming up on week 12, and I think that there should be more wow moments than those that make you go, ooh. And, you know, let's face it, that this is a chance for him to go out with a bang. And I'm anxious to see how he does. This is the first time he's been in this type of environment with Georgia Tech coming to town. And, you know, they're coming off a game, you know, that wasn't exactly the best performance last week against a non-conference opponent. But this kid is – there's the upside for Jacob Eason is just immense. I mean, it is – he's such a physical specimen. He is the classic can't-miss product. And there is a long way to go, but there is no doubt that there is so much to like about him. So, you know, I want to see how he finishes the season. And certainly there's a bowl game ahead for Georgia, and the extra weeks of practice will be big for him. But let's see how he finishes the regular season. He's going to need some help. I mean, they're going to have to go out and get some receivers, I think, to really, you know, bolster him up. Georgia needs some help on the offensive line. He hasn't exactly been put in the best of situations this year. He's had to overcome quite a bit. But there's no doubt that he has a lot of talent. Get him a little bit of help, you know, over the summer in recruiting. And who knows? You know, sky's the limit for a guy like that.
We'll finish up with this. I think there's an amazing level of symmetry when you think about Mark Richt back in 2001, who got a victory over Georgia Tech for an eighth regular season win, went to Nashville for the Music City Bowl. And isn't it funny here, you know, in 2016, 15 years, you know, later, Kirby Smart could get his eighth win against Georgia Tech. And if you listen to some of these bowl prognosticators, could also be in Nashville for the Music City Bowl. It's kind of interesting, right?
It is crazy. It is crazy. And, I you know, it's one of those things – the bar, people talk about the bar. You know, what is the bar? You know, who sets the bar? You know, who's the guy? Who's the guy, the judge, the jury that says what the bar is? You know, I feel somewhat bad for Kirby in that somebody said 10 wins is the magic number. I mean, who is the guy that says that that is the magic number? You know, I think Kirby is he had some moments this year where you kind of, you know, left. You know, the Vanderbilt game is certainly a moment I think Georgia fans will look back on and say, you know, that was just a bad moment for Georgia football. That game was not good. They did not look like they were well prepared for that game. But I think the last couple of weeks, the last three games, I think Georgia certainly has played better. I mean, the Auburn game was a sign that maybe Georgia is heading in the right direction. So it's been one of those roller coaster years. Listen, Kirby's never been a head coach before. I think everybody that's been an assistant in their first go-round, they're learning as much as the players are about how to do this. And I think Kirby will be immensely better next year as a head coach. And I just feel, you know, to replace a Mark Richt to be that first guy is going to be tough. And it's going to be tough the first year to replace a Mark Richt. So hopefully year two for Kirby will be a little bit better. And I think he understands the responsibilities of being a head coach and what it takes. I look at Will Muschamp as an example. His second go-around as a head coach, he's completely a different guy. Just talking to him, I've been over there a few times, and you watch him on the sidelines and his demeanor. I think guys just learn, and Kirby's having to learn on the fly in front of a lot of folks. But I think George will be better in the long run. And I think they've done all right under his career. I'm not going to say he's give him an A or anything, but I think he's done okay. And if they can beat Georgia Tech on Saturday, I think you'd have to give him at least a, you know, I think you'd give him a B on his first year. I don't know what you would say about that, but I'd give him a B.
No, I think that's a pretty fair grade. I think that's the assessment that a lot of people would probably agree with who are listening in right now. Well, listen, Dave, we love it when you call Georgia games on the SEC Network. You and Matt Stinchcomb always have a ton of fun together and always make it a lot of fun for the fans who are tuning in. So we'll look forward to your call at noon on Saturday for Georgia and Georgia Tech, and we'll look forward to talking to you again on Dog Nation Daily very soon.
Brandon, always a pleasure talking with you, and happy Thanksgiving weekend to you, buddy.
Thank you, too, Dave. Thanks so much.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Fruit.
Really good stuff from Dave Neal there. Looking forward to his call on the SEC Network on Saturday. And I thought his assessment of Kirby Smart was both very honest and true. I think if you want to give Kirby about a B for this year, maybe a B+, that feels about right. I mean, an A season would be something along the lines of taking the baton from Mark Richt and not skipping a beat. And pretty clearly, Georgia's skipped a beat this season. I don't necessarily put the blame for that on Kirby Smart. I think there are a lot of complicated issues going on with the Georgia program kind of led up to that. So for me, it's not so much about, you know, Kirby Smart's blame for why Georgia's win-loss record
is going to end up being worse in 2016 than it was in 2015. But you can't give them an A for a season in which Georgia at most is going to end up with, you know, one fewer regular season win than it had a year ago. And by the way, I also agree with Dave completely about, like, the Egg Bowl rivalry in the SEC between Ole Miss and Mississippi State. We've talked about that before here on the show. Same thing with Clemson, South Carolina, which, by the way, I'll get into with Seth Emerson a little bit tomorrow, because Seth used to cover that rivalry. He'll make an interesting comparison between that one and Georgia Tech. Some of those rivalries with lesser known, lesser than the powers in the SEC, those things are crazy intense. Ole Miss, Mississippi State, those fans hate each other to a degree that's probably not healthy. You know, here on Dog Nation Daily, we talk about the Gator Hater Countdown. We talk about hating Florida. But I also say the Gator Hater Countdown is not about hating people. It's about, you know, competition in sports and, you know, the desire to be better than a rival. But it's not about hating people. That thing over there in Mississippi between Ole Miss and Mississippi State, I think that may actually be about hating people. And sometimes Clemson, South Carolina kind of feels the same way. So sometimes the intensity level of those rivalries is not necessarily a good thing, but they are no doubt crazy. All right, so we'll get into the SEC through here, brought to you by SECCountry.com, before we say hello to Kyle Tucker. And, you know, let me start with this story. I think this is interesting in a lot of respects. You know, Gus Malzahn is trying to play coy right now with which of his quarterbacks he's going to start against Alabama on Saturday. As a matter of fact, you know, Malzahn would have you believe that right now he's trying to choose between three different guys. Either Sean White, the guy that started at Auburn, or I should say started against Georgia, Auburn's best quarterback clearly, or John Franklin III, the junior college transfer who was supposed to be the starter this season, or Jeremy Johnson, who began the year starter last season. So right now Malzahn's trying to say, hey, I might start one of these three guys against Alabama on Saturday, trying to create that level of subterfuge, is that the right word? I don't know if I ever used that word correctly. Subterfuge about, you know, what Nick Saban and Jeremy Pruitt should expect from Auburn offensively. And, you know, Saban this week, in so many words, essentially allowed that he doesn't care which of the quarterbacks start. It's not going to change the Alabama defensive game plan one bit. And maybe that's just gamesmanship on the part of Saban. But I do believe this shines a light on one of the things about college football coaches that I think is the absolute silliest. The fact that they work so hard to keep everything a secret when most of the things they try to keep secret don't really matter all that much. I mean, a somewhat injured Sean White, a not very good Jeremy Johnson, a not very good John Franklin. None of those quarterbacks provides all that different an element for Alabama to deal with. Yeah, Franklin runs a little more than White probably does, but, you know, at this stage of the game, all three of these quarterbacks have their problems, and Alabama's probably licking their chops about any of that trio that it might face on Saturday. I don't think Malzahn gains much from the secrecy. I think that's true for all these coaches. I think Kirby Smart wastes too much time worried about that kind of stuff, trying to keep things a secret that don't actually benefit from secrecy. So it's kind of interesting to see Nick Saban pushing back on this. In this respect, I think he's right. I think the rest of college football is probably wrong. I also thought that Will Muschamp had one of the funniest lines that I've heard in a while yesterday, talking about his team's preparations for South Carolina, that important in-state rivalry game. And he was asked about if he was going to give his players Thanksgiving off. And he said that Thanksgiving wasn't a day, it was a meal. And what he means by that is, hey, we're not taking the whole day off just because it's Thanksgiving. We'll have a Thanksgiving meal, but then we'll get back to work. We talked about this with Dave Neal a few minutes ago, and Dave kind of pointed this out. I guess Muschamp also goes on to say that they're going to watch a little tape after the meal and then watch a little more tape after that. And this is exactly the kind of thing that you would expect a Saban disciple coach like Muschamp to say. I'm sure Kirby Smart's mindset, he and Muschamp, of course, good friends, I'm sure their mindset are very, very similar in this respect, that, yeah, we may eat some turkey, we may have some dressing and have a meal, but we've also got a football game to get ready for after that, and so we'll spend a lot of time doing the preparations for that. Not a surprise to hear Muschamp say that, but funny nonetheless, and we'll make that your SEC through. All right, in just a moment, we'll get ready to say hello to Kyle Tucker here, who covers college basketball, college football for SECCountry.com. We'll get his thoughts on Georgia's game last night against Kansas and the big landscape around the SEC this weekend, including, by the way, clean old-fashioned hate between the Dogs and the Jackets. Before that, though, you know, for a while now, I've been telling you about Georgia United Credit Union and their cashback credit card that gives you 1.5% back on all your purchases. And what we've been saying is that 1.5% cashback you get from Georgia United can really help you take the small moments of everyday life, the regular things that you buy every day, like a trip to the gas station or, you know, fast food restaurant, over the course of time, those small moments add up to epic moments. And this time of year, we have all different ideas what epic moments might be. For some of us, it's a bowl trip to see the Georgia Bulldogs play, wherever that might be, or it's a trip back to see family on Thanksgiving, or the great gift you want to buy for that someone special in your life. Whatever your epic moment is, whatever your idea of an epic moment is, the way to make it more possible is with the cashback credit card from Georgia United Credit Union. Because with Georgia United's cashback credit card, as I said, you can earn 1.5%. So if you want to find out more, make sure you check out GUCU.org. You can apply today. And then after that, you can be earning 1.5% back on your epic moments. All right, so before we bring on Kyle, let me quickly say this about the game myself from last night. You know, I actually ended up watching a little more of this than I probably thought I would. For me, we talk about the idea of moral victory sometimes, and I think for most Georgia football fans, they'd say there is no such thing as a moral victory, and that's probably true for that program because of the stature that it has within the rest of its sport. But for Georgia basketball, which is a little lower on the totem pole, so to speak, than what Georgia football is, I think Georgia basketball has a possibility for a moral victory in the way that Georgia football probably doesn't. And for me last night, I'll tell you that I thought that Georgia probably got something close to a moral victory against Kansas. I think this is true for a couple of reasons. First of all, Yonte Mayton goes over 30 points last night. Georgia hasn't had a lot of 30-point scores in its recent history, and to say that now Georgia's got a player the caliber of Mayton, which can score 30, not just against a team, but a team against Kansas. I mean, you have to go back to the days of, you know, Caldwell Pope or someone like that to really get that kind of scoring at Georgia. So Mayton really brings that offensive load. Now, the yeah, but to that is the fact that Georgia didn't shoot very well around Mayton last night. And that's true against Kansas, but here's what's also true. In most games, Georgia's just not going to be as bad from three-point land as it was last night. Georgia was, you know, not just below average, they were well below average. So in a typical game, they should be able to shoot from beyond the arc a little better than they did last night against the Jayhawks. So if you add a little bit better three-point shooting to the effort that Yonte Mayton's getting you, all of a sudden, at that point in time, I think you're talking about a Georgia team that can be competitive in the SEC. And yes, I know this is another non-conference loss, of which Georgia has two, and kind of keeping with the trend of recent seasons when Georgia kind of digs a hole for itself in terms of a tournament resume in this non-conference season. But nonetheless, I think what you've seen from Georgia in a game like this last night and in the win against George Washington from Monday night, which I actually thought was a pretty good game, I think you see a Georgia team that's improved from a season ago, a better roster than it had a season ago. And I think that Georgia could be in a position to put all that together and make a run towards the NCAA tournament. That's what I think. Let's find out what Kyle Tucker thinks right now. It is great to have Kyle Tucker here, who covers Kentucky basketball, SEC football for SECCountry.com. And Kyle, we'll talk a lot of college football in a moment. We'll also find out about your Thanksgiving plans too, I guess. But if you don't mind, let me start with Georgia's basketball game from Tuesday night against Kansas. I just said before you joined me, I will take that as a moral victory for Georgia because Yonte Mayton proved he can score 30 points against a team the caliber of Kansas. I don't think Georgia's always going to shoot as badly as it did last night. So for me, I saw more positives than negatives. Do you agree? What was your take on the Georgia-Kansas game last night?
Yeah, I would say that's generally how I took it. Mayton looked great. Yeah, I think like you said, Frazier is not going to go whatever it was. I think they started 1-for-15 from three.
Yeah,
Frazier was not hitting anything. I think he's a lot better than that. I think he'll work to get some better shots as well. And Kansas got one of the best backcourts in the country. I think it exposed a little bit. Kansas had some issues inside, and I think it highlighted for people that maybe didn't know that Georgia's got. Arguably the best player in the SEC, not currently residing in Lexington.
Yeah, no, and that's certainly good news. You know, the thing I guess is going to feel like not great news here on this Wednesday, Kyle, is Wendell Carter, you know, player from the state of Georgia, he does choose Duke here today. Georgia was in the running. Don't know how serious that ever really got. But it's just another example that Georgia fans are going to point to of just not able to keep a big-time recruit like Wendell Carter in the state of Georgia. Now, obviously, you know, Georgia's not going to beat out Duke very often, but I do think there are a lot of Georgia basketball fans who wonder, is this program ever going to be of the caliber where it can even reasonably expect to keep an elite prospect in the state of Georgia and not see so many of those guys migrate out of state, because that's been true for a lot of years now.
Yeah, I think, I don't think that Wendell Carter was ever seriously considering really anybody other than Duke. He said Georgia, he said Harvard, which, you know, I think would have been awesome. I'd love to see there's been a handful of elite guys that have named Harvard, and I'd love to see one of them actually go there one day. I don't think Georgia was ever really on his mind, and I think that's going to be, Mark Fox, I think, is a really good coach, but, the question is always going to be, can he or why can't he get the handful of five-star guys that come through Georgia? He had one in Caldwell Pope, and they didn't do a whole lot with him, frankly, and maybe that's part of it. Although, the way John Calipari sells, these elite guys come to him and then they're ready for the NBA. Caldwell Pope was a lottery pick. You would think that would have maybe led to some more success, but so far it has not. And I can totally understand why, as a Georgia fan, you'd be frustrated by seeing the mass exodus of talent. But, can you really argue with a kid picking Duke in basketball? Duke, Kentucky, North Carolina. It's tough to go to war with those guys and get the ones they really want.
No, I think it's a very fair point. We'll shift gears here, talk about football for a moment. We had Dave Neal, who will call the Georgia Tech game this Saturday, on before you, and I was asking him to kind of evaluate Kirby Smart's first season. He said, listen, if you get the win over Georgia Tech on Saturday, you get to 8 wins. He said he could give that around a B or so for a grade for the season. That seems fair to me. Is that about where you would put Kirby Smart's first-year coaching performance if Georgia does get to 8 wins in the regular season after a victory over Tech on Saturday?
Yeah, and if you think of there were a couple clunkers in there, head scratchers. Losing to Vanderbilt certainly didn't help sort of the perception, but I think Vanderbilt is better than people think, and certainly the defense is. And then when you think about, and that was a close game. It wasn't as if they were out of that game. They were a play here or there from winning that game. And then you think about losing on a Hail Mary to Tennessee. You're really, really close to a much better season, a pretty special season for Kirby Smart, and all with a true freshman at quarterback. I think there were some not just head-scratching losses, head-scratching decisions. When you've got a couple of NFL running backs, and I know the offensive line was suspect, but there was a stretch of time where it seemed like they just weren't committed to the run and trying to put it on the strong arm of Jacob Eason. But he is still a true freshman, and I thought that was an odd thing to do, and it cost them a little bit. So I think there's probably some hard looks to be had. Guys looking in the mirror and Smart looking at his staff. Did he have the right guys? Were they doing the right things? I'm not sure all the answers will be yes there, but it'll be interesting to see sort of in the off season some of the self-evaluation, if there are any changes to personnel or just changes to philosophy. Like I said, one of the things that really just baffled me was going away from the running game for a little while there.
Yeah, no doubt about that. There's not a lot of drama in the SEC right now in terms of its playoff representative. That almost seems like a lock to be Alabama at the moment. But just below that, Kyle, there is some drama right now, and I'm curious of your opinion on this. The fact that based on the playoff rankings right now that came out on Tuesday night, you'd have Auburn as the highest-ranked team, and that could potentially punch a ticket for the Tigers to the Sugar Bowl. Now, Auburn's expected to lose this Saturday at Alabama, so that changed that a little bit. But I guess a couple-part question here. Between Florida, Auburn, Tennessee, Texas A&M, those four teams, and by the way, it was kind of weird last night to see Texas A&M not ranked at all, but those four teams vying for that second spot in the SEC, which would put that team into the Sugar Bowl, who do you think ultimately probably will get that, and who do you think's most deserving of being in that New Year's Six Bowl situation?
Well, with some work left to do, I guess I'd say if we're assuming Auburn loses, and where they're an enormous underdog, pretty crazy, really. Assuming Auburn loses, let's give Florida a win over Florida State, which I'm not sure is going to happen. I would probably say Florida, having gone and won at LSU, and then would have won at Florida State in back-to-back weeks. That would be quite a statement, and a division champion. I think at that point, it's hard to make an argument really against Florida if Auburn and Florida both lose and Tennessee finishes out with what would it be, three or four consecutive wins to get to 9, I think you can make an argument for Tennessee there. Texas A&M right now at this moment has probably the best wins of the group, and if they could beat LSU, they would be right there. So I don't know. I mean, there are too many factors left. There are too many really pretty big games and big opportunities for every team in that group except for Tennessee. Tennessee's just trying not to stub its toe and needs those other teams to falter. I guess my point would be that everybody's in a better position right now than Tennessee.
Yeah, it certainly seems that way anyway. Kind of a fun story to watch that play out towards the end of the season. Well, listen, Kyle, we appreciate your time here on Dog Nation Daily. Tomorrow is Thanksgiving. How do you plan on celebrating?
Yeah, I've got a basketball matinee this afternoon and another basketball game on Friday, and obviously a lot of football on Saturday. So we actually did our Thanksgiving last weekend back home in Tennessee. And then we've got a few family members coming up, some of my wife's family coming up. We're going to cook a big feast and try to enjoy the day between.
Well, wherever you are, whatever you're doing, we hope you have a good time. We appreciate you being a part of our show, and we'll look forward to having you on again real soon.
Yeah, thanks for having me, bud.
All right, good stuff from Kyle Tucker. Appreciate his time here today. Make sure you check him out on sccountry.com. He's always doing a great job. I want to point your attention to something here, a couple things before we say goodbye. First of all, don't forget, today is Wednesday, tomorrow's Thanksgiving, but this is Dog Nation Daily. We don't take a day off. We will have a show for you tomorrow, so if you get tired of your family, if you get bored after eating a bunch of turkey and maybe somebody in your family's getting on your nerves, just sneak out to the basement, out in the yard, somewhere like that. Put your earbuds in. We'll have a fresh episode of Dog Nation Daily just for you. Also, check out a piece from Seth Emerson, who will be with us tomorrow at dognation.com right now. He gets some thoughts from the chairman of the Music City Bowl committee, talks to some folks from the Liberty Bowl about the possible bowl destination for Georgia at the end of the season, shed some light about what still might be out there for Georgia, the fact that Orlando's probably still in play. Sounds like Georgia has completely avoided those two really bad bowl games nobody wants to be in. Pretty fun read. We'll talk to Seth tomorrow and see you then.